Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of. And we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid on Joy 94.9. Joy.
And welcome to tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Thanks again to David and Jade with Different Strokes. Cheers, guys. Tonight, we'll be looking at part two of our handmade horror and sci-fi made movies. Movies that are made by local filmmakers and creators. Movies made of intrigue, thrillers, psychological and otherwise. Now, the track we played at the start of the show was none other than Split Enz with I Got You.
And I played that because it's on the Cut soundtrack. And Glenn Triggs, who was on the show last week, mentioned that is one of his movies that he chose, I think. Or one of the few horror movies that have been
made in the last
10 years or so.
So last week we started by looking at two films playing at this month's MUFF Festival, or the Melbourne Underground Film Festival. We interviewed director Dom Deacon and producer Anna Young of Burlesque, and director and writer Glenn Triggs of Cinemaphobia. Both are playing at MUFF. And now, tonight, we're going to look at one more film that's going to be screening soon. It's called Purge, and it's written, produced, and directed by David King. We'll be playing an interview that Sonia had with David shortly. So after the interview with David, we have another interview with you. It's going to be with the director of the Norwegian-French film called Dark Souls, which is also playing at MUFF. We'll have a look at the film Scott Pilgrim, which came out last week. So we've got a fair bit of film
news
coming up tonight.
Movies. And just a quick background on Purge, which is directed by David King, who will play in a moment. It's playing at the Shed 4 on the Thursday, the 26th of August at 7 p.m. Now, it's set in a parallel universe where our futures are dictated by genetic engineering, and Purge follows the story of a young woman called Layla, who's destined to a life of BDSM servitude, but is unable to conform to her role as a mistress slave and is forced into an illegal underground society called Strays. Now, writer-director David King is a member of the legendary 1970s Melbourne Filmmakers Cooperative and has embraced the MUFF aesthetic of low-budget guerrilla filmmaking in Purge. Now, Purge itself incorporates 2D and, in some cases, 3D animation, mock advertisements, special effects and film within film to create a one-of-a-kind ambitious Melbourne sci-fi. So we'll be playing that next. Might as well do that now. You're listening to Sonia and Kaz on Sci-Fi and Scream. This evening we will be talking to David King, the director, producer and, it seems, overall creator of a science fiction film that's playing at the MUFF Festival this month. David King is a man of many trades and he's been happy to talk to us this evening on Sci-Fi and Scream. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks very much, Sonia.
That's great to have you on. Thank you very much. Now, David, can you tell us briefly about the story of Purge? Without giving too much away, so our listeners will go along and see it, what can you tell us about the plot of the movie?
Yes, I could, certainly. In the first place, I have to say, it's not exactly a sci-fi movie. It's more of a classy sci-fi movie.
Okay.
By which I mean that it's sort of set in a parallel universe. Everything in this universe looks the same as it does in ours, but things are different in a very essential way. That basically that all people are created by a genetic engineering company programmed for their roles in life, and if you fail to assume the roles you've been created for, you become what is called a stray and treated worse than a criminal. Now, the story basically can follow the trials and tribulations of a young lady called Layla Thomas, who's been programmed to be a bondage discipline sadomasochism mistress slave. So on her first day of work at her sister's upmarket salon, she suddenly discovers she's unable to resume her role. She becomes ill when exposed to the work, so she's forced to flee and join an underground, illegal underground organisation to survive. All she really wants is to go back to her rightful role in society, but because she's been addicted to a illegal drug, and the only people who have this drug are the strays, she can't get back to it. So the story basically follows that, but it's a very fragmented story. It's I had no intention of making a mainstream, commercial or conventional film. What I wanted to do was to explore the art of storytelling, try to create a kind of a science fiction mode of storytelling where the actual story is told in a very fragmented and disjointed sort of a manner, intercut with things like news clips, mock commercials and things like that, which basically give an overall impression of what the society is like.
Yeah, no, I did enjoy the mixed media or multi sort of, you know, the different shots overlapping, which sort of added to the story, sort of like a story behind the story of Layla. I mean, Layla's going through addiction and this ordeal, and yet behind it we can see that it's, you know, a regime that seems to be running everything, and people aren't allowed to be emotionally involved with anything, and yeah, it's quite shocking on that sort of level. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it does have a lot of content and going on in such a way. So you've said that your storytelling style is fragmented, and that is a deliberate thing. Do you think that's a good way of getting a story across? Is that why you used all those different media?
No, I don't know, actually. I mean, it was an experiment. And you see, I belong to the Melbourne Filmmakers Co-op back in the 1970s. Back in those days, there was a great deal of experimentation going on right across all forms of art and media. And it seems to me today that cinema has become very much the same.
Yes.
You know, all of the science fiction films you could go to see today pretty much tell the story the same sort of way, the conventional mainstream way of telling a story, and that's what everything does. Mm. So I wanted to try to get away from this, to get back more to the feeling of experimentation of anything could have was possible that we had back in the 1970s and the early 1980s. And that was one of the driving forces that motivated me to create the film like this, primarily because I felt that film today is becoming boring. As a matter of fact, Peter Greenaway, the British film director and artist, has said that we haven't had any real cinema as art since about 1982, and I would have to agree with him.
I wonder if he's talking about his own films. Maybe.
Well, I don't know about old films. I mean, old films, yes.
Who would be an inspiration to you when I look at the film? I myself see people like early George Lucas's THX 1138.
Yes, yes, you're right.
Those sort of influences. Are there others?
By Lucas' age, Sean McGonagall's Elphaboo, for example.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, which one of the things I particularly liked about that film, Sean McGonagall's Elphaboo, was the way that it was sort of like supposed to be set on this distant planet in a distant galaxy and cut to Palestine in 63. Although it came to disguise the fact that it was Palestine in 63, driving 1963 cars and so forth. Matter of fact, one of the things that interests me is creating a kind of science fiction where the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. I think that's a good point, actually. Now, as far as the storyline goes, it also reminded me of Brave New World. Stories like that, which have been around for a long time, but have that same sort of thread and idea, a regime of authoritarian control.
I think that basically whether you're right-wing or left-wing, once you start having ideology like free market ideology or any other sort of ideology, you get to a situation where people got more and more control. Also, there's another thing going on here, that with free market policies that we've had since the last maybe couple of decades or so, we've seen that people have less and less time for family, less and less time to...
It's harder to have a relationship these days, getting the time and putting that aside, you know, when you're working all the time and these big companies and corporations. Yeah, I think that's
right.
A good point.
And you can see the time when people just don't have the time to have children anymore. They don't have the time, or if they do have children, they don't have the time to raise them anymore. Because basically this is what's even happening now. I'm living in Port Arlington, and I'm seeing all of these people here in Port Arlington, families who don't have time to spend with their kids because they've got to work just to try to pay the mortgage, keep food on the table, all that sort of thing.
That's crazy.
The more that happens, the more you can imagine a time in the government might say, look, don't worry about having kids. We'll look after all that for you, okay? We'll take care of the whole thing. population will be fixed up. You don't have to worry about a thing anymore.
That's
and once
true.
They can do that, then they can start controlling people's minds. So that's where part of the whole idea came from.
Okay. You certainly appear on the credits, like I was saying before, in the areas of writer, producer, production design, even music. You're just so multi-skilled. It's amazing. How long has it taken for you to get to this level?
If you're talking about how long it took me to learn to do all those things, I started making films in 1974 when I was a student at the Gordon Institute of Technology's Humanities class making films in 16mm, and they were absolutely woeful. And then I hadn't been right through a whole career of being a scriptwriter for radio and television, running my own media business, things like that, making commercials and community service announcements and corporate videos, all that type of thing, just to learn the basic craft, the craft skills that I would need to do this sort of thing. And then I went back to making short films, worked with some very, very good cinematographers and people like that, and I learned from working with them. And so everything I do, I pick up more knowledge, more skill and knowledge all the time. But really, on Purge, it was the first time I challenged myself since maybe 1975 to do all those sort of jobs.
Is it the first full length feature you've done since then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's amazing. When I was looking at it, it did actually remind me of the way graphic novels work, when you've got the interspersing of the different graphics and things.
That in mind, one of the things that I've been partly influenced by was Japanese anime cinema.
Yeah, okay. We're actually doing an episode next week on the anime festival that's coming up in Melbourne. So that's interesting.
Right.
So you've got a fondness for manga and Japanese illustrations?
A fondness for it, yes.
Yeah.
I watched the Neo Genesis Evangeline series on television.
Okay.
When I was up in Brisbane, and I was just blown away by the visual, by the look of it, the way they, the animation, the lighting, the camera angles, the way it was done, all that sort of thing. It was just amazing. And I thought, well, I would love to do something like that with live action film.
That's excellent. It's actually playing, Evangelion 2.0 is playing at the anime festival in, September, I believe. So, hopefully people will recognise that similarity. I certainly did. Now, can you tell us a bit about the versatile cast you've got? Are they all actors in that cast?
The cast, Sarah Blinn, interestingly enough, it was her very first film role. She'd never played in a film before she played in Purge. Now, while we made Purge, Purge was shot over 2 years, she went on to act in several short films, and I think one feature film, I'm not sure whether that was actually made or not. She was really excited to get that role because it was the first real film role, an emotionally demanding role she'd ever landed. The others, Damon Hunter, for example, who plays Sergeant Detective Jack, he was much more experienced, been in commercials, television series like Blue Heels and things like that. Same as Randall Berger, who was in Neighbours, I think, Home and Away or something like that. And then we had Frances Marrington, who was primarily a theatre actress. And that's obvious in her performance, but I actually liked that because basically it was like she was encountering emotions that she didn't know how to deal with. And so because she didn't know how to deal with them, she was coming across like she was acting to the bleachers 50 yards down track. And then you've had Meta Royal, of course, who she was also fairly experienced. She played in Hating Alice Lashley, that feature film, and I think a couple of television series. I'm not exactly sure what the rest of her CV was, but most of these people came through a casting call where they found out about the film from other actors, and they contacted me and expressed interest. Casting probably took about 6 months before we actually were ready to shoot the film. We were having casting sessions all the time, sometimes a complete waste of time, and we couldn't find anybody suitable.
Yeah.
And sometimes we were in luck.
Now, as a gay radio station here at Joy 94.9, our listeners will be interested in the what we would call intersex character as one of the main characters in the film. Why did you think you would include diverse sexualities and practices like BDSM in your film? Was there a reason behind that?
Yes, I think that once you take love out of the equation, there's no more love between people, and there's no more real emotion between people. People are bred to do their job, make money, and to consume, and nothing else. Mm. Once you take love out of the equation, you find that sexuality becomes warped, and the upper echelons of society control everything, then only the people at the very top can afford to view the services of a live sex worker. Mm. And basically, even today, you'll find a large number of people at the top of the corporate chain are quite into things like bondage and discipline. Seems to be something that goes with power. Yes. But when people have power, they are used to dominating other people, and so somehow they get to the position where they want to be dominated when they're not actually working. And this is fairly common. I'm not saying that everybody in the corporate sector and in government and so forth is into BDSM. No, I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying it is, in fact, a fairly common thing to have to find in these some of these people's lives. And so basically that's where it came from.
And did you have people who work in that area actually advise during the film?
Yes, we had one, Mistress Tan, who is not really a heavy BDSM person, and she gave us advice, for example, when the scene where Lola was sitting astride the guy, ripping candle wax on him, we didn't know how this would actually be done. So I had to ask her, how do you do this sort of thing? And she said, well, you have to hold the candle a certain height above the person, otherwise the candle wax will burn them.
Yes, nasty.
And you don't want to burn them. So things like that, technical advice like that was very important to us.
And it's all filmed around Melbourne, was that correct?
Yes, North Melbourne. As a matter of fact, I have to thank Lindsay Saddington of Australian Centre of Performing Arts, because basically he gave us his entire four-storey building in which to shoot most of the film. Okay. And so if the film looks like it's got many different locations, that's some credit to the fact that this building can be made to look so differently on so many different levels, because most of it was shot in this one building.
It does. It looks like you've had, been locating all over Melbourne, but there's a lot of interior scenes. It's quite amazing what you've done. What was the budget like?
I haven't sat down and worked it out to the final decimal point, but somewhere around $33,000.
Wow, and it's just amazing what you can do with the efforts you've done, but it's taken 2 years to complete.
It took 2 years to shoot, but we were shooting mostly weekends and weeknight evenings, and we were shooting every week. Sometimes we don't get one shot in a month. A lot of people tell me, well, this is going to be absolutely impossible. How are you going to keep the cast and crew together? Well, as a matter of fact, we didn't keep the cast and crew together. We only had a very small number of people, about 3 or 4 people who were together all the time. And that's why we had so many different makeup artists, for example. We had about 15 different makeup artists because we couldn't keep the same makeup artists on the crew all the time.
And now, where to next for the film Purge after Muff this month? Will you be shown at other festivals around the country, or will it go overseas?
Yeah, it's going to the BUT Film Festival in Breda, the Netherlands.
Oh,
and that's the next one coming up in September. Mm. I'm not exactly sure of the date, though. I've just been in touch with them and sent the material over to them yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Excellent. That's exciting. Will you be going with the film?
Oh, I don't think so, unless somebody helps out with the airfare.
Yeah, right.
It's not exactly cheap to go over to Europe.
That's true. Not these days. Now, finally, what next for you, David? Do you have any projects that you could talk about now, coming up?
Well, I could, but I'd rather keep it close to my chest for the moment, because it's still
right.
Thunder. There are two projects, and one of them is overseas with the Dutch film critic, Tom Van Roy, who liked Purge and gave me a lot of help in getting the distribution contract for it. And there's another project which is very, very avant-garde, very abstract, which I'm working on because I'm sort of inclined to go in that direction more than conventional storytelling. But beyond that, I can't really divulge much more at the moment.
That's great. Thank you anyway. Now, where can our listeners go online to find out more about Purge and about yourself?
Okay. Well, people can go to www.purgefilm.com.au, and that's the website for Purge.
Okay, and Purge is playing Thursday the 26th of August at the Muff Film Festival.
That's right, Shed 4 at 7 p.m.
Shed 4
Docklands.
That'll be great. Ooh. Now, there was some 3D in there. I just want to mention that. Unfortunately, I didn't have any 3D glasses. Okay, look, thanks so much, David.
No.
Thank you very much for coming on to Sci-Fi and Scream this evening. And that's David King, the creator of the film Purge, which will be shown at Muff this month.
You are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. That was Sonia's interview with David King, who's the director of Purge, playing at Muff. We're going to talk a little bit now about Scott Pilgrim, which Sonia and I have both seen. Look, I mean, I always watch Talking About Your Generation and I play along at home, and I'm always just a tad pissed off when Josh Thomas lets the Gen Y side down with his comical but ultimately incorrect responses. It always makes me wonder if he's genuinely stupid or he's just too cool for the proverbial. Now, how does this link into Scott Pilgrim, I imagine you're wondering? Scott Pilgrim, a bit like Josh Thomas, is kind of my people. He's about 23, periodically unemployed, chronically idle. He loves video games and he plays bass very poorly in a band. Now, he falls in love with Ramona Flowers, who's the new girl in town, but to truly win her over, he needs to defeat her 7 evil exes. Now, Scott manages to hold his own against these evil exes with a blend of moves lifted from Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, and Zelda. There are the scenes in which the visual effects truly hold their own and the real world sort of blends in with the setting of an arcade video game. The fight manages to be both breathtaking and hilarious, and I'll bet nobody ever thought that the occasionally dour Michael Cera would ever be called on for wire work. Will Scott Pilgrim prevail? Well, you'll have to go and see for yourself. Now, it's an interesting film, and it really represents a subsection of Gen Y who genuinely CBF. That's can't be fucked, for those of you who aren't down with the lingo. This kind of white bread Canadian world of Scott Pilgrim tends to define and characterise people by their seemingly most superficial features. So, for instance, one of Ramona's exes is Matthew Patel, the Indian guy. And Wallace is the gay roommate. And Knives Chow is Chinese. It's kind of these really basic descriptors that in other films have a tendency to negatively define and restrict people. But it doesn't really feel that way in Scott Pilgrim. Now, whether it's the intended purpose or not, it feels like this kind of labelling of the non-white, non-straight, non-Canadian characters is sort of a novel positive thing. It makes these others stand apart from the ultimately mediocre and grey kind of standard characters. Now, this film is not particularly cerebral, nor is there any real malice in it. What you get is a generation of privileged slacker, but generally nice young folk who mean no offence and for whom hating or genuinely discriminating against anyone would be too much like hard work. This kind of leads to the principal problem for Scott Pilgrim and many of his friends. By failing to confront their personal and relational problems, they've built up a backlog of trouble, a kind of unacknowledged negative of their own lives. Now, I know I just said that this film wasn't cerebral, but maybe I lied. There are some really interesting concepts to explore in Scott Pilgrim, and I hope my rambling hasn't turned you off the film completely. Now, Edgar Wright, who's best known for Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, has created an intensely enjoyable and original film, from the rocking soundtrack, which features Beck, to the truly amazing visual effects. It's as though he took that awesome technology from the recent Speed Racer film, which looked fantastic but was ploddingly dull, and married it to a far worthier script. Now, some of the scenes are a little reminiscent of Hot Fuzz and Wright's earlier TV show Spaced, but generally it's a bit of a knockout that will leave you wondering how they managed to get it all in without sort of breaking through that suspension of disbelief. Now, I love this film. To be honest, I don't know how I feel about having a part share in a generation that can be defined by whatever, but I acknowledge it and I understand its parameters, so ultimately I'm comfortable with it. Scott Pilgrim vs. the Universe is the kind of film for those of us who are just here for an average time, not a long time. It's kind of talking about my generation.
I really liked it too, and it's not my generation, but I did enjoy it.
I think it's the kind of film that's really going to appeal to a wide sort of scope of people, but there are definitely things that are generational that
very
you're just going to
specific.
Sort of pick up. Yeah, like yeah. Sort of a lot of the Zelda and the video game references. And
yes, there's anime references as well.
Big anime references, which are all kind of part of the books as well. What did you think of Michael Cera as Scott Pilgrim?
Well, I always have a bit of a problem with his actual vocals, his voice, but once I've moved on about that, he really is, you know, like the Pilgrim's Progress. He is the Pilgrim, he's the person that, you know, you can see a lot of your own self in, of course, as he goes through this emotional hurly-burly, basically.
Yeah, by sort of being this kind of rather blah character, he's a bit of an everyman.
Yeah, he absorbs everything around him, and even though he's quite naughty, he's not a bad person for having dated such and such and then dumped them. And then you can actually relate to that people just...
Yeah, they're not. It's not done with anything. The people aren't malice. Bad. Yeah, there's no malice, but they're just they're not actively good or moral. It's a really sort of interesting play,
but it's not amoral either.
No,
like I love the scene where he's at the party and you know, he apparently he's had a relationship or he slept with Kim, the drummer.
Yeah.
Who's an actress. Is it Alison Pill?
Yeah, Alison Pill, who was also in Milk.
Yeah, she's amazing. The little role that she plays
as
the drummer.
You wouldn't recognise her. I did not recognise her until I looked her up.
But she's a hell of a drummer.
And
holds the band together.
Yep.
One, two, three. You know, I mean, just classic sort of rock sort of mentality. But he slept with her and we don't really know what that relationship is now. But we get these snapshots of relationships and... Mm. And they're kind of like, if you've got attention deficit, it's perfect.
That's it. It's kind of like what happens when you, instead of dealing with the aftermath of a relationship, you just kind of try
run
to
away.
Forget it or
I
run
love
away.
It when he runs away.
Oh, and it's very literal, but it's really interesting. Mm. I thought the other standout, and you mentioned this as well, was Kieran Culkin.
Yeah.
As Wallace Wells,
yep.
who
of
is
the Culkin tribe.
Of the Culkin tribe, much maligned, who's Scott's gay roommate, who's just fantastic.
He's really brilliant. I would love to see that role, him, get a nod for best supporting. It'd be interesting if a film like this, which I think has got a very strong plot, very strong storyline, innovation, special effects, it's very well glued together.
Incredibly.
It deserves to get a recognition at the higher end of the spectrum. I just hope it does.
Yeah, it's a film we haven't seen before, to be honest. It's really not like... It's reminiscent of anime, absolutely. And it reminded me a bit of Speed Racer with the colours and the look. But
much better story.
And
about the story, like, it's a Canadian thing. We were talking about that before, you know. Is it a cold weather thing?
Well, you were saying it could be a bit like New Zealand.
Yeah,
you know?
Some of the characters and just the eccentricities. Just reminded me, I loved that bit where he invites Ramona, played marvellously by Elizabeth Mary Winstead. Mm. I think I got the name right.
Yeah, Mary Elizabeth.
Oh, sorry. Oops, she was awesome and Death Proof, but so different in this with the blue hair, you know, just plays that type so well. The alternative indie, moody
kind of chick
thinking type.
Yeah.
I love it when he invites her around to dinner, so it's a date, and he makes... Garlic bread. I laughed at that because I thought, I've been on a date where someone didn't even bother making garlic bread. They made, a bottle opener and we had homemade beer and chips.
It's just so typical of that. Like I remember saying to people when I finally move out of home, all I'm going to do is eat cheesecake. Like I was just going to stock my... It's that kind of mentality. When you're free, when you have a choice, you're just going to eat all your favourite foods. Yeah. So really kind of slightly... The thing is, it's not even hedonistic because it's not even interesting enough to be hedonistic.
I won't catch up with you, though.
All right, tell me about it. But it's just one of those things. It's like, like I said, privileged slackers. They have the freedom to do what they want, but they don't do anything with it.
No. They just sit around. Oh, I love that scene, too, where he's with Knives Chow and they're playing... You know, that one of those games?
Yes, they're playing the dance 3000 or whatever the hell it's called.
And then when he's obviously got his mind on someone else, he loses badly.
That's it. And
that's just a great
Knives symbol. Knives is played really brilliantly by Ellen Wong, who I think you said this is her first
time in
a role.
Feature film, and she does amazingly well. So I loved it. And, of course, the soundtrack. I can't wait for that to be available.
Amazing soundtrack.
It has people like Frank Black on it from the Pixies. It's got Plumtree, the wonderful psychedelic Los Angeles band Beachwood Sparks. Even some T-Rex is thrown in there. So it's definitely... going to be a great sound.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Spring.
So don't worry about all the hype. Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe is definitely something you want to see.
Sci-Fi and Scream with Kaz and Sonia. And Kaz wants to announce something.
I just have to correct. I was talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, which is actually the title of one of the books in the series.
Uh-huh.
The film has taken on a title of one of the other books, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So there you go. I did that classic mixing up the adaptation and the original
material. It gets hard after
material.
A while. Yeah, it does get hard.
It does get hard this time.
Definitely. And we were just listening to Scandinavian pop princess Robin from her 2005 album. And that was With Every Heartbeat. We like that one.
Excellent album.
So we're looking at Scandinavian French films and Dark Souls. And I had an interview with one of the directors, César Ducasse, a little wee while ago. And it's one of the films playing at MUF, as mentioned earlier. It's going to be playing at the Classic in Elsternwick on Wednesday, the 25th of August. Now, it's called Mjøkje Sier, and that's my Norwegian, and please don't hate me for that. It's about a young girl called Johanna, who's attacked and seemingly murdered. Now, her father receives a phone call from the police pronouncing her a dead. And as he sees her walk in the front door of the house, obviously something strange is happened to Johanna. Now, similar attacks begin to happen. And Johanna's father takes it on himself to find out the truth. He embarks on a dark thrill ride of lost memories, conspiracy, and zombie-like symptoms. Finding the mysterious darkness within is the source of the bizarre world he has uncovered. So let's have a listen now to that interview that I had with César Ducasse. And tonight on Sci-Fi and Scream, we have a very special guest I'll be talking to in a moment, and that is one of the directors and producers and creators of Dark Souls, very new Norwegian thriller horror movie. And I'll be talking to César Ducasse, one of the creators of that Norwegian French production, which is doing the festival rounds at the moment. It's also coming to Melbourne very soon from the 20th of August and the Underground, Melbourne Underground Film Festival here for the year. And welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream, César.
Hi.
Hi. Now, getting back to looking at your film, just for our listeners, without any spoilers, can you just give us a brief summary of what Dark Souls is all about?
Yeah, so Dark Souls, which is Mjøkje Sier in the original title, it's a horrific thriller about an evil contamination and the darkness that lives around us. The film starts off as a slasher, like Friday the 13th, for example, like Jason Voorhees. It starts with a killer in orange suit that drills a teenage girl in the head. So it looks pretty straightforward in the beginning, but the film quickly evolves into something else. And we understand that the victims do not die, but are left in some kind of vegetative state, and they have some kind of cancer. And as the movie evolves, we follow the father of one of those victims. He's a music teacher, and he wants to make his own justice. And without spoiling too much, the disease will spread more and more as the story unfolds, and let's say that's something to do with an oil company in the end.
Yes, I was looking at some of the images online, and this oil everywhere coming out, exuding out of the bodies of the victims, which looked amazing. So instead of blood and gore, it's oily mass, which is definitely different.
Yeah, now, yeah, it's we wanted to make a film about some kind of contamination by some kind of evil, and we choose to portray with oil, because for several reasons, and the fact that we in Norway, we thought it was interesting. But there's also the film is we don't take ourselves too seriously for some reason. Some kind of there's a dose of irony in the film, and so it's not very
Okay, so a bit of dark humor, literally, in there.
Yeah. Dark humor. Yeah. I'm sorry about my English.
Oh no, it's excellent.
We tried the thing we really wanted is that when you watch the film, you don't feel bored. So we tried to mix some kind of some cliché of the genre, fantastic and horror films, so that you never know where the film is going. We've had a lot of influences. Like we really like Kiyoshi Kurosawa, the Japanese director.
Ah, yes.
Who also use there's always a black disease coming in his films, and it's always about darkness. And we also really like David Cronenberg, of course, his first film. So we've got some influences that we tried to hide, but that is, I think, visible in the film.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially when you see one of the characters, she's crawling through the dark mass in a hallway, and it reminded me very much of the Japanese horror type of genre style, you know, the blackness sort of seeping into everything, like this dark sort of energy, you know. Pretty scary. Some of those films, like the original Grudge films, spooky.
Yeah.
Without a lot of special effects. It's not really required.
Also, we had a pretty tight budget, so and since we shot everything in film, 16mm.
Okay.
So we didn't have very much space, complicated special effects, so...
Okay, and that's sort of the thing we're looking at in these two episodes. What we're doing on Sci-Fi and Scream at the moment is we're looking at local filmmakers, Australian in particular, and how they get their inspiration to put the house on the market, literally, and make these films, all handmade, made
locally on a shoestring budget. And I guess I'm not including you as shoestring budget, but from what I've read about the background to Dark Souls, you're like a team that definitely putting themselves into your productions, and at a, you know, a very good rate of cost, very little special effects, but still making something that looks genuinely, you know, scary and can hold up.
Well, that's when we started the shooting in June 2007. Mm-hmm. And we ended the shooting in 2010, like in beginning of 2010. So it was a very, very long process.
Very long.
And that's because we didn't have enough money to make a proper shooting in 6 weeks, 7 weeks. So we just shot 1-2 weeks, and then we earned money by working as I work as an editor in Norway. So I made money, and then I used that money I injected the money in the film so that we could buy some films and continue the shooting. And thanks to the actors who were not paid, we managed to make the film from A to Z. So it doesn't look, there's some shot between one shot and another there was like 1 year or 1 year and a half. And of course we try to have the same haircut and the same light and the same, you know, so it's
continuity nightmare.
Exactly. And especially that our team was quite small, so we had to do everything ourselves, and I mean everything really. It was interesting in a way that we had control, we had 100% of the control upon the film. So
well, I guess that is definitely the pro against the cons of what you're doing, because you do have that control, artistic control, while you are, you know, making these smaller films. But I've just noticed, you know, from the festivals that Dark Souls has been to, and there's a lot of festivals.
Yeah, and in the beginning, we because, you know, when you work so much on a project, in the end, you're not sure about whether it's going to work out or not, and you're not sure if people will like it or not. Everything becomes blurred, and recently we were in a festival in Sao Paulo where we were competing with five or six films, and in those five and six films there was a Survival of the Dead by George Romero, and another film called The Crazies, which is a quite big budget. And we thought, well, it's great that we can compete with those films, but of course we have absolutely no chance to win anything.
But you have been winning.
We won a prize, so that was really amazing. We didn't believe our ears. It was really cool.
Was that the Manhattan International Film Festival? You won Best Horror Audience Award. I noticed that.
Yeah, and we also won the best audience in Manhattan.
And others? There's,
As I said, we won in Sao Paulo, and won a prize in England as well. We will soon be in the Cambridge Film Festival in England, and in Edmonton Film Festival in Canada.
Oh, excellent. Cool.
But we are, of course, we really hope that our film will be selected festival like specialized in horror, like Sitges or Gérard Mer in France. But those festivals are really, really big, and I hope we will be selected, but going to be difficult.
Are they very competitive, those ones? They're the hardest ones?
Very, very competitive,
Okay. But it looks like you're on the way, and I guess the momentum's there. You're getting all this, you know, getting good attention, and smaller festivals onto medium-sized ones. So is that how it works? And then word of mouth and
as I said, it's the beginning of, we are in the beginning of the process, and like the festival things, we have to take care about all the PR on the film and the website and the trailers, and in the same time the film itself is not completely finished. We need to master some of the picture, and there's some sound that will be, some music that will be different as well. So yes, there's a lot to do, and probably only the beginning.
So it's still evolving, basically. Is that what normally happens, or was that how you guys work with your films in particular?
No, normally it's much more like that. There's the shooting, and then post-production, and then PR, and then the film is released. But the fact that we are completely independent on that film makes it more like much longer process, because like the other director, Mathieu, Maria, who is the co-producer, and I, we have been working on the film, on directing the film, and then we have edited the film, and then we are taking care of the festival. And so since we are only three to do all this, we have to do everything one at a time. It makes everything longer. Normally it goes much shorter,
Yeah, I guess normally you have a bigger team or, you know, the bigger companies.
Yeah, you pay people to do stuff that normally you won't do.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
But then again, it's interesting because we really see how it works during the filmmaking process from the beginning to the end. So we know how it is, like the festival thing. I made a film before, a feature film, a science fiction feature film, which was much more, which was made on a normal basis. On a normal basis, was shot and then released right away. And I didn't do all this thing with festival and PR and everything. So it's a very new experience, and it's very interesting because it makes everything, you understand everything, and there's literally thousand little things to that is necessary to make a film.
Not only the shooting
and there's a lot of very small details, like a write or a word in the film, and you have you really have to think about everything, and it's a very long process, but I hope in the end it will be rewarding.
Well, it's amazing how multi-skilled you and the others of Addict Films are. Just looking at your resumes online, that's obviously been very important in this whole process, particularly for Dark Souls. I mean, you just sound like a really good crew of people. Looking at your own background, you've done television, as you said, documentaries, music videos, commercials, and short films. And was it Lies Inc? Is that the one you were talking about earlier?
Yes.
The feature film from 2004. Very.
Yeah.
That's multitasking in your career so far to date, isn't it? It's incredible.
That's our passion. I think really love what we're doing, and I hope that one day someone will come and that we will be able to be paid for what we're doing, because right now we just work editor for other companies, but our filmmaking is not yet. It's very difficult to earn your life as a filmmaker, and I think most of the filmmakers that here disagree, because it's a very difficult market. Of course, if you're Steven Spielberg, you will earn a lot of money, but there's not that much people in this case. There are quite a lot of filmmakers.
Yeah. Now, stylistically,
I've read an article interview about David Cronenberg, and you would think David Cronenberg, he can make whatever he wants, but he said that even today, and he made quite a lot of film. Even today, it's a struggle every time he wants to make a film. So I guess it's a great job. It's a very entertaining to make a film and to follow the process. But it's not very. You don't get a lot of money. So you have to have another job at least in the beginning on the side
and keep going with your passion.
And keep going,
keep going with that. I was going to say, actually, stylistically, do you think that your film has a Scandinavian or Northern European sensibility compared to other horror films? Do you think, for example, Let the Right One In, were you inspired at all by that film or influenced in any way?
Not that one, because I've seen that one very recently. I think it's a masterpiece, by the way. Yes. I really loved it. We were not inspired by that film, by Let the Right One In. We were more inspired. We were not inspired by Northern horror. Recently, there has been quite a lot of horror film in Norway, like Fritvilt, which is called Prey in English, and Hovdyr, which is Manhunt, some others, and Dead Snow.
I've heard the Manhunt one, but it's hard to see these films here in Australia because of the lack of. There's no real horror sort of festivals on a scale like they have with the normal international film festivals, unfortunately, so it is hard to get them.
Those films are very interesting because it's great to see a small country like Norway making those kind of films, but those are more like slashers or some kind of parodic films about slashers, and we were more inspired by the horror film from the 70s, 80s. There's no quick editing, there's no effect, it's quite slow paced, so our inspiration comes more from the 80s than what they are doing right now.
That was César Ducasse. We will actually have it up on our podcast, the full interview with him, the director of Dark Souls, due to play here at the MUF Film Festival this month. And it was great talking to someone with such a beautiful accent.
Lovely accent.
So far away as well.
So that was a pleasure to do that. So Sci-Fi and Screen, tonight we've looked at Handmade Horror and our sci-fi episode and horror episode part two. We looked at Purge, the feature film from local filmmaker David King, and we also, of course, spoke to Cesar Ducasse about the Norwegian film Dark Souls. And we do have a little bit of an event coming up. Well, we don't have it, but Can't Stop the Serenity, which is a fundraiser. And you know a bit about these people.
I do. I was actually at Can't Stop the Serenity last year, and it's something that goes on around the world. It's basically screenings of Joss Whedon's film Serenity, and it's charity screening fundraising for Equality Now, which I think Whedon might be a patron of. He's definitely a big supporter.
So
it's a really good cause.
Yeah. Now, it's on at the 28th, and it's going to be at the Melbourne University, I believe, Union
Building.
That's
right, Union Theatre at Union Melbourne Theatre. Uni.
That's right. So about Equality Now, it was founded in 1992. It's been going for a while. Now, they basically are a group of people who look at human rights, particularly for women and girls, and they mobilise international action and support to help stop certain human rights abuses to the female population of the globe. So it is a great event to be partaking in, and certainly it's supported by Joss Whedon himself, the genius, of course, behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Dollhouse, Firefly, and the movie which the whole event is based on, which is Serenity. So we will keep you informed with that.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So you've been listening to Sonia and Kaz on Sci-Fi and Scream. And up next we've got Adam with none other than Bandcamp. So stay tuned. And next week, what are we doing?
We're talking anime. Very exciting.
It'll be great. We'll have a guest on, Jim Morrissey. And he's a big, passionate person when it comes to anime. We'll be reviewing some films that are on at the Anime Film Festival at the Nova.
Certainly will, so get excited.
Get excited. We'll see you then.
Sci-Fi and Scream was synthesised and squashed into shape by Sonia, Albert and Kaz. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Scream, or check out joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.